From the Sky News Centre at 6, Prince Harry and his brother William are enjoying a walkabout in Windsor, meeting some of the crowds of people gathered for the royal wedding. The brothers have been having photos with fans, chatting to children and shaking people's hands. We also now know Prince Charles will walk Meghan Markle down the aisle tomorrow. That's gone down well with these royal fans in Windsor.
I think it will be absolutely magical on the day, seeing them walk down the aisle. It would just be really emotional, and I think he's been a real gentleman.
That's absolutely amazing. Brilliant. To me, that's the right choice.
Final preparations are being made ahead of the couple's big day tomorrow. Also this afternoon, a number of people have been killed in a shooting at a high school in the US state of Texas. Police in Santa Fe believe fewer than 10 have died. One person's in custody and one is of interest. Both are believed to be pupils. An officer was also shot and injured, and explosives have been found. Donald Trump spoken of his sadness.
We grieve for the terrible loss of life and send our support and love to everyone affected by this absolutely horrific attack.
The former Russian spy poisoned in Salisbury more than 2 months ago has now been discharged from hospital. Scotland Yard has refused to explain what security arrangements it has in place for Sergei Skripal, though. Another 88,000 BMW cars have been recalled due to an electrical fault that can cause the engine to cut out. It's affected 390,000 certain 1 and 3 Series, Z4 and X1 models. And in sport, relegated West Brom have appointed Darren Moore as their permanent head coach, while other Premier League clubs heading for the Championship, Swansea and Stoke, are both looking for new managers. That's the latest from the Sky News Centre. I'm Annie Joyce.
Pat and I take you on a scrumptious spice journey with succulent chicken and vegetable tapas dishes.
This is Bristol. It's Friday, 6 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's May 2018 9/11 Truth Special. I'm Tony Gosling. As the rest of the corporate media wastes millions of hours of airtime and millions of column inches on a criminal elite wedding in Berkshire this weekend, we take a look at how the super rich elite here in the West plan to hold on to their power into the 21st century and the age of the internet through war and lies, killing their own people, dumbing the rest of us down through controlling mainstream media narrative. Tonight, the attack on New York and Washington on 11th of September 2001 is in danger of turning this 21st century into a century of perpetual war. Normalising the policy of regime change, targeting a country's resources and government, then cooking up any old excuse to invade, including faking TV footage or even killing your domestic population, then to blame the attacks on the country you want to invade, the so-called false flag attack. NATO's Anglo-Zionist Empire has been sending special forces into Syria and Iran to train terrorists violating international law. Where it's politically difficult, we just hire Blackwater, or whoever they are, whatever they're called these days, or their friends to do it on contract with deniability. So we'll be hearing tonight from our studio experts, author of 9/11 The New Evidence, Ian Henschel, an Oxford-based retired engineer and author of a new report on the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7, Dave Barmby. Also from airline stewardess Rebecca Roth, who was so incensed with the 9/11 lies, she did her own investigation, which she produced as a book called Methodical Illusion. And before Hollywood director and candidate for governor for Arizona, Aaron Russo, died of cancer 10 years ago, he spilt the beans on secret conversations between himself and banker Nick Rockefeller, who told him in the 1990s about elite plans for the world, including a 9/11 style event leading to the invasion of Afghanistan many years before it actually happened. Plus, finally, on the Israeli connection, Jewish former head of studies at the US Army War College, Alan Sobrowski, who believes the Israeli mafia control many key US institutions, including the Congress. That's all in the second hour and the first hour this week after 6 o'clock. But first hour, two weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, dry and low, temperatures around 12 degrees Celsius. This weekend, warm and sunny, very little cloud, around 20 Celsius. Very nice for the event in Berkshire, which we will not be mentioning. Next week, it's dipping, temperatures dipping midweek. Cloud of cover and rain, a couple of minor showers is all we're going to be getting next week, and generally quite sunny. Next weekend, there's the 26th and 27th of May. Sunny again, but a little cooler, 15 to 18 Celsius. Sunny week, clouding over a bit at the end of the next weekend. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So joining me in the studio now, say hello to everybody, is Ian Henshaw, author of 9/11, The New Evidence. Hi, Ian. Welcome
hello.
Back.
Hello.
Also, Old Labour Oxford economist Martin Summers.
Hello.
And Dave Barmby. I think what we'll do is we'll start with you, Ian Henshaw. What inspired you to write the book, 9/11, The New Evidence?
Well, just nobody else had, and it needed doing, and I had a mainstream publisher who was prepared to publish it, which was, you know, quite unusual for a 9/11 issue. And actually, without wanting to boast too much, my book is still in print 10 years later, and people who know much about books will know that that's, you know, of sorts an achievement. I still get royalty payments for it. But the sad reason, of course, is that the mainstream hasn't really published anything since that's taken it any further. It's always surprising, though, to look back 10 years and see, you know, without wanting to sound conceited, how accurate my book was about the issues. Because, of course, we've got two different sets of issues, really, with 9/11. We've got what you might call the paper trail, you know, such as how did these alleged hijackers get onto the planes when the CIA knew all about them? And then you've got the what I would call the physical evidence, such as how come it looks very much as if the World Trade Center was exploding rather than collapsing with pieces hurled out at high speed. But my speciality, I guess, is the paper trail. And of course, there has been some rather amazing developments in the last year or two in the American courts. We've got two parallel actions going now in the American courts. One is seeking to blame the Saudis for the 9/11 attacks, and of course there's a great deal of evidence to support that, at least on the surface. And the other is now, recently, very exciting, trying to get discovery of all the evidence on how the Twin Towers collapsed, which of course has been kept secret. Even the blueprints of the buildings have still been kept secret all these years afterwards. But due to a rather amazing event in the American Congress 2 years ago, the courts are now prepared to investigate this issue.
Joined in the studio by Dave Barmby, who's just brought out his own report into the collapse of World Trade Center Building 7. But before we hear from Dave, Ian, why is World Trade Center 7 so significant?
Well, because it wasn't hit by a plane, basically. I mean, the official story in a nutshell, in a soundbite, which is, of course, all you ever hear about the official story nowadays, the official story says the buildings collapsed because they were hit by planes. And that is taken to explain everything. For instance, explaining the fact that the firefighters were so sure the buildings wouldn't collapse that they set up a headquarters on something like the 60th floor, which, of course, led to 300 firefighters dying. Experts didn't think it would collapse. Nobody did. So, but the explanation given is that planes hit the buildings. But of course, World Trade Center 7 was not hit by a plane. The most it was hit by was a bit of falling debris from one of the other World Trade Centers. So here you have a one-off event in the history of architecture and engineering, the collapse of a steel frame building that was not hit by a plane. There were fires, but fires don't bring down steel frame buildings. It needs much higher temperatures than that.
Over to you, Dave. What was it that made you think that you had any sort of expertise to look at what happened at World Trade Center Building 7?
I'm an engineer, and any self-respecting engineer ought to be able to study what I've studied and produce a short booklet like I've done in the last couple of months. I'm quite new to this subject, and I think I'm like everyone else on 9/11.
What prompted you to write it, though? Just tell me.
Well, that's what I'm just going to explain. I mean, Ian has taken some of my thunder away by talking
about
WT7. But Going back to 9/11.
Okay, so let's just get to cut to the chase. What was it about what you saw happened at Building 7 that made you think that there was a it was needed for someone with your engineering expertise to go into it and have a better look?
Well, I didn't think about it very much until a couple of months ago, because I looked at the architects and engineers analyses on the internet, and there's loads of that, and they were coming to the conclusion or showing that it was a controlled demolition. They didn't seem to do very much on criticising the NIST report. NIST, by the way, is the National Institution for Standards and Technology, who were tasked with looking into this work, and so it was only 2 months ago when I was invited to go to talk to Professor Bailey, his inaugural lecture at Queen Mary College London, that I was thought his lecture was so naff and missing the point, so I there and then got almost angry, and I decided to start looking at it in detail. So, having got a recording of his talk, I then went through it bit by bit, and essentially pulled it apart, which is what I'm going to talk about.
Let's just have a look at NIST. How did they get involved in the collapse?
Well, NIST weren't initially involved. Initially, it was
the National Institute for Science and Technology. Is that it?
That's right. Standards
and Technology.
Now, what happened, Tony, is that initially the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, were tasked with looking at it straight away after almost immediately after the event on the 11th of September 2001. And they spent a year looking at it, and it was generally thought that FEMA weren't coming up with the right story. They were missing the point as far as the politicians were concerned. And the National Institute for Standards and Technology were brought in to look at it, and it's quite strange, really, because I think they were quite bemused themselves at having to.
Okay, so what's wrong with NIST's findings?
Well, I was going to come to that. I wanted to talk about the problem that NIST had in the first place to look at it. Okay, so NIST had an awful job because they were sort of undermined by President Bush on the first couple of days when he talked about the when he announced the war on terror on, I think it was five days after the event. So having announced that it was a terror attack and that we're going to declare war on the terrorists, there was not much less that NIST could look at. They couldn't look at the possibility of control demolition.
They weren't interested in the political side of it, were they? Surely they were just looking at the collapse and what caused it.
Well, they obviously had terms of reference, and they didn't have much to go on, really, because that building came down, WTC 7, in six and a half seconds, which is almost free fall.
Okay, so NIST said what exactly?
Well, NIST came to the conclusion, the only thing they could pin their hat on was fires in the building. So they say it was fires in the building, office furniture fires, which heated up the steelwork, the columns and the beams and the girders, and caused a beam to fall off the girder, setting in motion a collapse, what they call horizontal progressive collapse, which is a new term that came out of that time to explain what happened.
Now, let's see if we can bring in Richard Gage from Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Richard, can you hear me?
I sure can. Hi, guys.
Yeah, so could you give us your assessment of NIST and how reliable their initial report was?
NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, was tasked by Congress to explain the collapses of all three towers. And all they are able to come up with is that because of these fires, as the gentleman mentioned, we have all of a sudden, because of thermal expansion, pushing of long-span beams, pushing a girder off of its seat on this particular column number 79 in the northeast section, caused the 13th floor to fall, the 12th, and so on for nine floors, allowing column 79 to be unbraced for nine floors, and that caused the complete failure vertically through that section of building from top to bottom, 47 stories, and then this instability travels laterally across this football field length building in about 10 seconds, and then we see the overall building coming down, and none of that makes sense, but especially when you look at the building, it falls completely from top to bottom in under seconds, symmetrically at free fall acceleration, as fast as a bowling ball falling off the building. So that makes no sense because, that means 40,000 tons of structural steel did not provide any resistance for at least a third of this building's fall. And so where did it go? I mean, it was 3 to 5 times stronger than it needed to be to support this building, and all of a sudden, it's not there at all. The building doesn't fall in stages and allow time for columns to buckle and break. No, it falls suddenly, smoothly, symmetrically, just like the old controlled demolitions, like for us in the U.S., the old hotels in Las Vegas, but you have controlled demolitions here in the U.K. as well. So since it looks exactly like a controlled demolition, NIST should have seriously considered controlled demolition right up front among their first hypotheses as to how this building came down, rather than relegate it to a series of frequently asked questions and the answers to those a year later on their website.
Richard, what is it that you think happened then? If the NIST report is not correct, what happened at World Trade Center Building 7?
Well, it's very clear what happened, because just by watching it, you can see that it looks exactly like a controlled demolition. The videos completely betray the NIST theory of initiation of collapse. What they show is that all of the supports had to have been taken out down low in the building, at least 8 stories, simultaneously. All 82 columns in this building had to have been removed within a fraction of a second of each other. This can only be done by explosive controlled demolition. And that is exactly how they do it. And as a matter of fact, we have lots of evidence of just that in the aftermath of this building's collapse.
Dave, can I just ask you, with your report that you've done, and you produced it and you put it out there for peer review, what are the implications of the things you've found, you yourself, in this report that you've done?
Well, I think the implications are the same as Richard Gage's just stated. I've gone into some of the aspects in a bit more detail. I've only concentrated on WTC7. Richard mentions the free fall for the first 100 feet, that's about 5 or 6 stories. There was nothing supporting the floors. They just went down one after the other. Is that correct, Richard?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. It just falls, the whole building, as fast as a bowling ball, yeah. As I mentioned. There is
And then after
you
that...
You can't do that with fire. Fire's never even brought down a skyscraper, ever, in the history of skyscrapers. Before 9/11, not one has come down due to very much hotter, larger, and longer-lasting fires in these buildings.
Can I butt in there? Yeah, there was an interesting article in the New Yorker, which is, of course, a mainstream publication, so they couldn't go into it in any further. But they asked a series of experts whether they thought the towers were going to collapse before they did. Nobody thought they were going to collapse. The architectural profession had a big debate as to whether those buildings were safe. The fire department, as I mentioned earlier, set up their headquarters in the buildings. Nobody thought those fires were going to cause the buildings to collapse until the collapse happened.
Right, I'm going to ask you all the same question, including you, Martin Summers. Why does it matter? You first, Dave Barmby.
Why does what matter? The fact that...
How the building collapsed, Building 7.
Well, if it collapsed due to fires... which is so far-fetched. If it did collapse due to fires and there was a natural event, the way it's explained is building WTC7, a material from the Twin Towers, that's WTC 1 and 2, was ejected across 400 feet, by the way, and came in through the windows and set the furniture alight. But if you look at the windows, as you see the fires, there's no sign of windows being broken.
No, but why does it matter how the building collapsed and what made it collapse? Surely all that really matters is that it did collapse.
You're going to the end story, really, here. What matters is if it was a natural result of the planes striking WTC 1 and 2, then the official story stands up. But if the official story doesn't stand up, then you have to ask the question, how can those buildings come down? And Richard has identified, and has got a lot of stuff on the website, showing that it was a controlled demolition. So if it's a controlled demolition, then who... That requires people to set up the charges and the wiring and the computer program and all the rest of it. That's going to take at least weeks, maybe months ahead. So that's a pre-planned operation.
Martin Summers, why does it matter how Building 7 came down?
Well, I think it's very interesting that on the day Donald Trump was on the record, because of course he's an entrepreneur who builds these kind of buildings, saying there must have been bombs in the building. So that's on the record, one of the few sensible things Donald Trump's ever said. And the other point, of course, is that clearly this is an inside job by the US security forces, probably part of Gladio-style operations going back to the 1950s, 1960s, the bombing Bologna railway station. The Italian police are pretty much convinced that was carried out by NATO intelligence services, but of course many people are blissfully unaware of the history of NATO terrorism.
Now this is something we keep accusing others of, like Gaddafi, the idea that a government might be bombing its own people. What's the implications of that?
Well, it didn't just happen on 9/11. It's been going on before that. That's what I would bring to this discussion. There's actually overwhelming evidence for Italian police investigation. In Posimato was the head of the Italian Supreme Court. He was investigating magistrate on many of the bombing attacks in Italy in that era. And the finger pointed very clearly towards NATO intelligence services, CIA, MI6, SEISMI. So they've killed a lot of innocent people already before 9/11.
And in Posimato went on to denounce 9/11. There's almost certainly a similar...
Okay, Ian, the question to you, why the focus on Building 7 and how it came down? Sure, this is just a technical matter, really.
Well, no, I mean, as we've heard, you cannot do a controlled demolition at 3 hours' notice. And, you know, so that's the fact. So there had to be foreknowledge, and somebody put the explosives in the buildings. You know, what do we think it was, Al-Qaeda? Well, in that case, they had even more, you know, vastly more capabilities than we ever would have imagined.
Okay, Richard Gage, why are we right to focus on Building 7 and the way it came down? And if so, why?
Well, the reason we do in the United States is that it is an educational opportunity to awaken architects and engineers to the broader picture of the Twin Towers. The reason we start with Building 7 is because this is the third worst structural failure in modern history. And yet most architects and engineers throughout the world are completely unaware of it. The American Institute of Architects did not educate their own members, of which I'm one. The American Society of Civil Engineers did not. And so when we show them this in our exhibition booth with all the evidence, in the conferences of architects and engineers all around the country, we show them Building 7 coming down. And by the way, your listeners can watch this very quickly on YouTube by searching for Building 7 collapse. And what they'll see is what the architects look at this and they go, oh my God, anyone can recognize it's a controlled demolition. Then you show them the few small scattered fires in this building that are said to have brought this building symmetrically down at freefall acceleration into its own footprint in the exact manner of a classic controlled demolition, then their minds are open to looking more detailed at the evidence with regard to the Twin Towers.
Now, look, Richard, some people, maybe architects, will say, well, this Richard Gage is pretty much on his own. Tell us a little bit about architects and engineers. How many people have signed up and agree with you that this is something that really doesn't need proper investigation and that don't agree with the official account?
Right. Well, if I told you that 3,000 architects and engineers told you that your house was in danger of collapse, would you listen to them? Yeah, we listen to them. Well, 3,000 architects and engineers are demanding a new investigation of the destruction of all three skyscrapers on 9/11 because they took the time to examine the evidence, and they're shocked by what they did not know about, by what they have not seen in the mainstream media, what they have not heard from their government or their associations, professional associations. And so then they start talking to other people and their representatives in government. And you know, that's why we have in the U.S. an act for draft legislation for the reinvestigation of the destruction of all three towers called the Bobby McElvain Act, because Bobby lost his life in the North Tower as he was entering the building, and he was blown apart, literally. And his father has been screaming from the rooftops, supporting the architects and engineers, along with other family members who are on, two dozen of them at least, on our petition calling for a new investigation, including one from here in London, Matt Campbell, who lost his brother.
Okay, so how is this going, Richard? Is there any likely to be a reinvestigation, an official one in the U.S.?
Oh, sure there will be. There's been slowly building support for this among the public, and the pressure is increasing now on governmental representatives. And we will get that investigation. It is not among the top priorities.
One of the places that is looking at it is the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, and they have something called World Trade Center 7 Evaluation. But apparently that was due to report any time now. This is a university department having a good look at Building 7. What's happening with that?
Yes, this is a three-year, $300,000 finite element analysis study of the third worst structural failure in modern history, and we have contracted with one of the top forensic structural engineers in our country, Professor Leroy Halsey, the chairman of the Department of Civil Engineering there in Fairbanks, and they'll be coming out this summer with their draft report, and it is just like NIST did. You know, it took NIST 8 years to come out with their report. Well, we're doing it in three. We've got a head start. And this is the report that NIST was tasked by Congress to produce, but which they failed miserably, with a report that can only be termed a cover-up of the crime of the century.
Ian Henschel, what do you make of, you mentioned these legal challenges earlier on, what do you make of any serious progress towards officially, literally, getting people in front of judges, answering questions, and making some real change over, I mean, it's a bit like something like the Grenfell Tower fire. A lot of people want to see arrests, questions answered about councillors like Rock Fielding Mellon, who apparently the Conservative from Kensington and Chelsea, who signed off this flammable cladding as the new kind of way of cutting costs on that tower. The similar thing with September the 11th. What people want to see is proper legal investigations and people having to ask questions who were responsible for what happened.
Well, I think what you know, I'm not that optimistic, to be honest, in the long run about the American courts. I think the United Nations is a much more likely forum to get the full truth about 9/11. But the great thing about the court cases is that it makes it very, very difficult for the mainstream media to pretend that there isn't any issues here. And sooner or later, it's going to crack. I mean, I know most people that I know don't like Trump much. I don't like him much either. But his hands are fairly clean on the 9/11 issue, which you couldn't say for Barack Obama or, of course, George W. Bush, who benefited so much by it, and by Barack Obama, who continued to cover it up and tried to obstruct justice as much as he could. Oh. So, yeah, you know, it's a huge step forward. And who knows, you know, so we might get some people speaking out of turn in the court hearings, and then it'll really go big.
Yes, hopefully. But look, one of the key things was explosions which were reported in the World Trade Center buildings where 1 and 2, the big twin towers, before the planes even hit here.
Can you
tell us about that and what evidence is there for that?
Well, the main, you know, the most high profile figure is a guy called William Rodriguez. And you can see a picture of him in the White House with Hillary Clinton, with George Bush at a White House reception. He was a very respected guy. He was described as a hero. He had immense knowledge about the building. He worked there as the chief building janitor. And he was in the basements, and he's got no doubt that there were massive explosions in the basements before the planes hit the buildings. And, you know, there are other reports corroborating that as well. You can look into the seismic issues, you can look into the plane flight issues, and it does look very much as if indeed nasty, huge, big explosives were going off in the basements of both World Trade Center 1 and 2.
Now, Richard Gage, is this something you've come across?
Yes, it's not just William Rodriguez. There are many, many witnesses of explosions in the basements. And whether they're before the plane or after the plane, there shouldn't be any explosions in the basement. We're talking about a 50-ton hydraulic press that is completely destroyed. We're talking about the parking structure damaged very, very badly. Many, many witnesses actually talk about explosions before the planes hit, which is, of course, direct evidence of pre-planning for this event as well. Some think that these particular explosions are intended to have sabotaged the firefighting effort by the automatic sprinkler system. But regardless, there should not be explosions in the basement. There should not be explosions in the lobby, which were not caused by the jet fuel. And there shouldn't be explosions going off 20, 40, 60 stories down below the point of jet plane impact in each of these buildings, which the videos show plenty of. Why are those all happening? The firefighters, over 118 of them, described in the oral histories that were recorded by Thomas von Essen in October, all these explosions, seeing explosions, feeling explosions, I mean, experiencing them, being blown around the building by them, seeing flashes of light. We showed these on our presentation that we did at the Seven Dials Club the other night, and we had 150 people in the group that raised their hand at the end, all of them, Not one of them believed the official story after actually having looked at the evidence, and that's why it's so powerful. So I do encourage people for themselves to check out this evidence on YouTube. Our DVD is there. It's called Experts Speak Out, 9/11 Experts Speak Out. And they can see 40 high-rise architects, structural engineers, metallurgists, chemists, physicists, controlled demolition experts, all laying out this evidence, which is absolutely irrefutable.
But hang on, Richard, because if planes hit a building, this doesn't happen every day, does it? Surely there's going to be repercussions within that building, explosions going off anyway.
The planes hit 1,000 feet or more up above the basement. There's no repercussions that would destroy a 50-ton press down below. Or the lobbies, which were completely destroyed. The elevators had explosions. They were described by witnesses as the doors blowing out and open. Only two elevators come down from the point of jet plane impacts from the all the way continuously from the windows of the world up there. So there were pre-planned explosions in the basement and in the elevators, which apparently were designed to sabotage them. That's speculation, but what's not speculation is all the evidence of these explosions that were in fact picked up 20 miles away at the seismic station at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, which are evidence of explosions, according to geophysicist Andre Rousseau, who in 2012 developed a long peer-reviewed paper that that documents that these seismic signals were not the airplane hitting the tower. These are explosions, very powerful explosions.
Now, if 9/11 was some sort of criminal inside job, one of the first things that you would see is that the story would be changing. This is what always happens. Any copper will tell you with a criminal is that you've got to make sure that they actually stick to the same story. If the story starts to change, maybe the whole thing originally was a lie. Now, Ian Henshaw, can you give us any indications that the story has changed over the years?
Well, the story has changed spectacularly, actually, because originally the word unthinkable appeared in practically every politician's mouth in the West. Unthinkable. Well, it might have been to the public unthinkable, but it certainly wasn't to the establishment, because we know that Operation Bojinka was an Al-Qaeda plan that never came to fruition 4 or 5 years before 9/11 for blowing up airlines and flying them into buildings. That was they knew about that. Condoleezza Rice, who constantly went around saying she was the Secretary of State, who constantly went around saying how, you know, what a big surprise it was, nobody could be expected to predict this, blah, blah, blah. Rubbish. They had predicted it, or at least it was a known possibility. They said, and here's the really big one, they claimed that the alleged hijackers who flew the planes into the buildings, and that's of course another issue altogether, whether they did or not, but the alleged hijackers, they said, were completely unknown to them. And gradually over the years, and this I think is a really, really big issue, it's come out beyond any doubt, based on the testimony of multiple FBI officers, that actually these hijackers were quite well known to the CIA, and they were indeed protecting them from arrest. The FBI, several FBI officers have stated very clearly on the record that had it not been for the active obstruction by the CIA, not the passive obstruction, the active obstruction by the CIA, had it not been for that, 9/11 would never have happened. That's, of course, if you follow the official story about the hijackers, which is another question, because most people think they couldn't have flown the planes.
Yeah, they weren't that well trained, were they? Now, Richard, what about you? Let's hear from you about was there any indication that the story, whether it be by NIST or anyone else from the government, the military, that it actually changed about what had happened?
Oh, yeah, NIST changed their story about Building 7, for instance, several times. They had 7 years that they delayed the final report coming out after architects and engineers who completely forgot about it. I mean, those who knew about it, which is a very small percentage. So at first NIST was saying, oh, the diesel fuel was because there were generators providing backup electricity in for the 23rd floor of this building, which was a command bunker that Giuliani was intended to use for a running the city in the event of a major catastrophe like this. But later it was confirmed by many associated with our group, particularly that there's no diesel fuel burning in this building. The diesel generators were on the fifth floor with large louvers that were not even smoking. So we've got them to back off on that story, and then they had to focus on this incredibly warped sequence of events, starting with expanding beams pushing a girder off of its seat. But none of that could have really happened either, because these beams are fully fireproof. They can't heat enough to expand. What this did in their computer model is to apply all of the heat from these fires into beams in just a second and a half, forcing them in their computer model to expand to try to make this warped theory of theirs work. But it's fraudulent all the way, because they have to eliminate critical structural components from the connections, such as stiffeners, which would have kept the flange of the girder from folding once it got halfway off of its seat on column 79. They omitted shear studs on the top of the girder, which tied it to the concrete slab, which means it never could have slid sideways from the very beginning.
And so, Richard, sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, what you're saying sounds to me as if there may have been deliberate fabrication by NIST. Is that really feasible?
Deliberate provocation?
Fabrication. I mean, these are supposed to be
absolutely
professionals.
Yes, this is fraud. It's complete fraud from beginning to end. They omit these stiffeners, and they do not provide the computer input data that gives them the results that they say proves their theory. And so we file a Freedom of Information Act, which we can do in the U.S. with any U.S. agency. And if it's not a matter of national defense, they have to release this information. But what do they write back with the only out that they had and say, oh, it might jeopardize public safety if we were to release this information. Well, wait a minute. It jeopardizes public safety, does it not, to withhold this information from the architects and engineers who are tasked with ensuring the public safety? This is absolutely a black box. This is not open investigation whatsoever. And every time we see into it, what we see is fraud, including this whole theory of the collapse vertically inside the building and the gutting of the interior of the building before the overall ever comes down. Had that happened, we would have seen massive deformation of the exterior structural steel section. It would have been crumpling like a beer can if the inside came down first, because it would pull in those perimeter columns. They're rigidly tied. There'd be massive breaking up of granite panels and windows. We don't see any of that. We see a perfectly straight down symmetrical collapse like the old hotels in Las Vegas.
Now, what you're saying is absolutely fascinating, but have you had a reasonably good reception in the mainstream media over in the US? Have there been documentaries which have had, you know, an official from NIST, etc., and you discussing all this so that the American public can make up their mind?
Well, NIST will not go on record. They're very shy about exposing themselves. But we did have a 45-minute presentation on C-SPAN, and guess what? On the Washington Journal program, of the thousands of videos and interviews they've done with political and other figures, it became our interview became the single most watched of all of the videos on the C-SPAN.org website. So that tells you something. You know, when people have a chance to see this, they pass it around with each other. But no, we have not been invited to speak to Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, etc.
I mean, the thing is, sometimes you've got to knock on their door. What's your experience of the big guys, you know, that like CNN, etc.?
Well, in 2013, as an example, we put up billboards all around New York and around the world, on top of taxis and right in front of the New York Times. A 50-foot-tall billboard is huge, 20-foot wide. And it said, "Did you know a third tower fell on 9/11? The evidence might surprise you." And there's some other provocative information specific to the New York Times, because they put out an article denying this alternative theory. So we've certainly tried. We've knocked on all their doors. We've delivered them the evidence directly, as we have for all 535 members of Congress, giving them the 3,000 petition signers, the evidence in DVD form, and the Bobby McElveen Act text, which we're looking for one brave congressman to actually introduce as legislation to start the controversy.
So Richard, why is it, do you think, that they don't seem to want to hear what you've got to say? Why is that?
Well, I could speculate about that. I think Ian would probably do a better job, but initially, I would say they have a lot to lose. I mean, 9/11 gave us a $4.5 trillion global war on terror, which continues to this day in what is known as the 9/11 wars. There's about four or five or six of them, depending on how you count them. There's about to be one or two more in Syria and Iran. And as Ian has indicated, this is a provocation, 9/11, in a series of false flag operations that have been going on since the beginning of governments manipulating their people into war in order to gain regional hegemony in some part of the world, Middle East in this case, and enrich the arms industry, the banking industry, and the media, all of whom work together. In fact, 90% of the mainstream media in the U.S. is owned by just six corporations, who are in turn owned and operated by these other sectors of the economy, which I mentioned.
Yeah, one of the things that I've noticed about this is that it reminds me a bit of the communist era in Eastern Europe. I'm old enough to remember that, when the party line came out and everybody had to just fit in with the party line. And that's sort of what happened with 9/11. By 12 o'clock that morning, the American media had decided that Al-Qaeda was behind this. No real investigations at all. And of course, it's odd that, you know, on the one time they were saying that they didn't have any foreknowledge of it, and then on, you know, they could find out within about an hour who'd actually allegedly done it. So, you know, you find this party line. I think that's what happened to NIST. I think NIST basically thought, well, we can't look at the possibility of a controlled demolition, or we'll all lose our jobs, or something terrible will happen. You know, NIST is under the direct control of the White House, by the way. It's not the same thing as the normal air accident investigative bodies, who are much more independent and who have caused a lot of embarrassment to the White House, actually, and were not given the job of looking into the 9/11 attacks. So, you know, people, it's also about how people find it hard to imagine. And what editors in the mainstream media are doing is they're looking to say things that their readers are going to like reading, because otherwise they won't buy it again. And so if they tell them truths that are just too unpleasant or worrying for people, you know, it's not good business, quite apart from the fact that they're going to get into trouble in their careers.
But we have all sorts of chokehold truths, don't we, about what foreign governments are up to, killing children, gassing them, all this sort of thing.
Oh, we're quite prepared to make allegations against everybody except us. And I mean, I just thought that anybody who sees themselves as a citizen of the world must have noticed that President Assad of Syria gets a very different treatment from President Bush of America when something goes wrong in their country.
Martin, what do you make of this whole reluctance of the mainstream press to really take this seriously, to sort of get balanced views with both sides, Richard and NIST, for example?
Well, I mean, I think it's already been said that the mainstream press is bought and paid for to a large extent, and I do a lot of work.
Well, the BBC is surely government-funded.
Well, yes, it's government-funded, but
government-controlled
as well. I mean, I do quite a lot with a lot of work with Russia Today, and the fact of that is that they're constantly accused of being, you know, enemy propaganda, whatever. We live in a world of propaganda. And just on a more general point, if the three buildings, steel frame buildings, collapsed on 9/11, which is what the official story says, then we should be actually closing down all steel frame buildings all over the world, shouldn't we? If they catch fire, they collapse, apparently. But in fact, we didn't do that, did we? Yeah. In actual fact, all these buildings, we've got some of them in Bristol, there's plenty all over the world, nobody has closed down a single building on the back of this, even though three steel frame buildings collapsed as a result of fire. It doesn't make any sense. And of course, the mainstream media is really shown up in all of this. But of course, they lie all the time. They've lied about chemical weapons attacks in Syria. They've lied about the Skripal case here in Britain. And I come back to the NATO's history of false flag terrorism going back to the 1940s. And there's actually masses of evidence for that. The Belgian police, the Italian police, there's been investigations in Switzerland, and they all point in the same direction. The bombings of Dublin and Monaghan in 1972, where the Irish police are pretty much convinced the Barron report points to MI5 being behind those bombings which killed 27 people. This is the sort of thing they've always done, but people live in a bubble where this has been going on forever, but they live in a world where they go shopping every Saturday and watch the game, and that's what's going on for them. And you know, people are dumbed down. We've got infotainment.
Humans are sort of pack animals. We've got the genetic
Generally speaking, as long as they've got a critical mass of people going along with the story, loads of people will go along with it, because not to go along with it is more effort than to go along with it.
I suppose there's also tremendous embarrassment involved in admitting that for whatever 10, 15, 18 years you've been getting it wrong.
That's right.
And you've been lying to
people. Mark Twain said that the real problem is not convincing people they've been lied to. It's not lying to them. But they won't admit that they've been fooled. What's it Bush said, you know, fool me once, fool me twice, we won't get fooled again, or whatever it was. But I mean, that is the psychology. And don't forget, this has been orchestrated by psychological warfare officers. The people behind all of this are military officers with psychological warfare training. And of course, they know this is how it works, which is why they've got away with it so successfully so far.
Whether or not that's the case, Richard Gage, maybe you could just wind up by giving us a few pointers as to really good resources where people can go and have a look at this for themselves.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of information out there. There are hundreds of websites all around the world for members of the 9/11 Truth community. I like ours because what we've done is assemble the most scientific forensic evidence out there, which is not boring to look at. Again, on YouTube, I would highly recommend people search 911 Experts Speak Out. That's the documentary that we made on the subject, and just on the subject of Building 7 alone, there's an excellent YouTube video called 9/11 Solving, 9/11 Solving the Mystery of Building 7. Actor Ed Asner narrates this group of engineers and architects, and in 15 minutes you can get a great sense of the evidence of this Building 7, and everybody should be looking at that anyway right now, because it's you got to see this building coming down and just imagine hearing some government agency trying to tell you that this is due to scattered office fires, which is what they were, small, few, and scattered. By the way, the BBC announced the collapse of this building 20 minutes before it ever happened. I'm not kidding you. They apologized for this grievous error, citing the confusing events of the day. They even give the reason, due to weakening when the structural towers went down, the Twin Towers, due to structural weakening. So it's absolutely incredible what they're trying to pull on us. I mean, you can see Building 7 standing right behind the BBC's Jane Stanley as she's announcing the collapse of this building, when no skyscrapers ever collapsed due to fire. And yet CNN also announced the collapse of this building actually at about 10 or 11 that morning, not to be outdone by the BBC, and that was also obviously a mistake. There's also construction workers walking away from Building 7, hearing an explosion over their shoulder, looking back at the building, and then looking straight into the CNN camera, and they say, "Watch out, that building's going to blow up. A flame and debris coming down. We're moving back because the building is going to come down." They all know it's going to come down. They've been told it's going to come down. They're waiting for it to come down. And this is completely unprecedented.
What about the owner of the World Trade Center, Larry Silverstein? Because I think he said something about this. He mentioned apparently they were going to pull the building, pull it. Now, is that really, can you pin that down as something which is definitely about controlled demolition or not?
Well, sure. He says, he's interviewed a year later on the PBS, America Rebuilds is the name of the program. And he says right there, I've been talking to the fire commander, and there's been such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And so they gave the order to pull, and we watched the building come down.
So now, what does that mean to you?
He comes back. Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, what could he be referring to? He comes back later and says, "Oh, I meant pull the firemen out of the building." But guess what? The firemen were not in the building. They weren't fighting the fire. The FEMA and NIST both say there was no efforts to fight this fire. So they weren't pulled out of the building at noon. There was no fires that were actually actively seen until about noon. So that's, he couldn't have been mentioning that. Pulling a building is a term in the controlled demolition industry to pull a building.
Now, the other thing is, of course, in the World Trade Center Building 1 and 2, there were firefighters who had reported that they'd almost put the fires out just before the buildings came down.
Oh, yeah. The fires were severely diminished at the time of the collapse, particularly in the South Tower, where there's a few lapping flames and indicated by the thick black smoke. We have very cool fires that are oxygen starved. So NIST, of course, blames the collapse of the Twin Towers on these raging fires at the time of the collapse. In fact, is really their theory, because these floor trusses that spanned 20 meters between the interior group of core columns and the exterior column, they sagged. And when they sagged, they say they pulled in these perimeter columns. But the physics of it is such that even if there were fires, sagging floor trusses cannot pull perimeter columns in. There's not enough lateral force whatsoever. So they forced, in their computer model, all these columns to fail all the way around the building with a 5,000-pound load at each one of these 14-inch square steel tube columns that occur at 3 feet, 4 inches.
Okay, Richard, we're going to have to go to the news now. We're going to have to go to the news now, but thank you very much. I'll put links to the various websites you've mentioned there. I know you're going to be on the George Galloway show in an hour or so you maybe better go and get ready for that. And our show page is thisweek.org.uk. We'll be back after the news with Ian Henshaw, Dave Barmby, and Martin Summers here in the studio.
Online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News Centre.